Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today, Britt Penrod, is the senior vice president of Raleigh Studios in Hollywood. He'll be discussing studio rentals, state tax incentives, saving money on productions, and how to get the most production value for your budget. Carol, I understand Raleigh Studios is a donor to the Roy Dean Film Grant.
Yes, Claire. Raleigh's been a sponsor for over 10 years, and they're very generous to our grant and also to independent filmmakers. So, Britt, thank you so much. We're honored to have you with us today.
My pleasure. It's nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we have so much to cover because I really love Raleigh. I've been hosting events there and spending time at Raleigh Studios for about 15 years now, so I've watched it explode, and it's so much fun to watch things grow at your studios. But let's start with what facilities Raleigh provides to filmmakers.
The facilities here are typically, I think, run the gamut, everything from real estate rental, like stage rentals, office rentals, to services, whether it's post services, lighting and grip. And we now have several facilities throughout the United States and a couple overseas. But just the one in Hollywood specifically, as you mentioned, the screening rooms, which have been a nice asset for us and for a lot of filmmakers over the years. We also have food and beverage and special events. I think it pretty much runs the gamut of everything you need for production is probably housed here at the studio lot.
Well, let's start with Hollywood's history, because it was originally founded by Adolph Zucker for the famous Players Fiction Studio in 1912, right?
It's got a great history, yeah. And I think the first structure was finished in 1915, which is now the guard shack at the Bronson Gate, which is attached to a Bronson building, which it finished in 1919. It was originally a barn and it stored hay and wagons. And at that point in time, here in Hollywood, there are photographs that show nothing but fields for as far as you can see. So all of the dense population didn't exist when the studio started. And many silent films were shot here, including films with Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, Charlie Chaplin. And there was never any master plan. It went from a few different owners, from Famous Players to Clune to Tech Art Studios, California Studios, and Raleigh purchased it in 1979, so we've had it for about 35 years. And every owner put up a few new buildings, whatever they thought was necessary at the time, and it's kind of turned into what it is now, which is a fairly eclectic but successful little gem of a studio in Hollywood. The Studio Cafe is kind of unique. Originally, it was a film set in 1957 for a Frank Sinatra film, Writer's Bungalows, that now have a television show in occupying the building. That was originally a set in 1936. And in both cases, they just liked the structure so much, they just kept it and built it out, and now they use it for other purposes. So it's a dense, cute little studio, and in those nearly 100 years, all of Los Angeles is built up around it.
Well, I know the Studio Cafe is wonderful because some of the events we've had, we've used the cafe, both sometimes indoors, sometimes just outdoors, but the food is fantastic, and the whole ambiance. You can sit outside and have your lunch And you watch the actors to-ing and fro-ing and the nervous producers, and it's you really get the feel of Hollywood, don't you?
You do, and I'll be one of those nervous executives probably sitting out there having lunch as well.
Well,
I think one of the things that's unique about the studio, like you mentioned, I think it has kind of a warm and welcoming quality to it. And I think that's one of the things that makes studio unique is that you feel comfortable when you go and you feel welcome when you go. And that's, I think, one of the great qualities that we try to implement wherever we have a Raleigh studio, is take that Hollywood experience of feeling like you're family and somebody that wants to support you in whatever your goals are, and try and establish that in other locations as well.
Well, you have done a good job with the home base, because whenever I drive on the lot and go up to the guard gate, they're always efficient and kind, considerate. They'll tell you where to go to park. They really take a personal interest in you. And I've been on most of the studios in Hollywood, and there's just a nicer feeling. And as soon as you get on the lot, you just feel so relaxed. Oh, goody, I'm back, you know. It's a good feeling. Screening room.
Yeah.
About the Mary Pickford. Mm-hmm. Because I just think that is a brilliant place for independent filmmakers to rent and screen their films. It's so much fun to see something on a big screen with posh seats and a control room and your own projectionist. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
And you're in the middle of a studio, which is fun. And I wish we're a little more widely known that you can actually do that. It's a place where you can, regardless of the budget of your film or the number in your audience, I think there's two theaters, or one's 36 seats, the other 38, that do everything from small, you know, rough cut screenings to digital dailies to film critics will come in at night and watch films in the smaller theaters for write-ups and publications. And then a 160-seat theater for small premieres or seminars, and we've been fortunate to have you use them for your seminars, and I've sat and watched many of your seminars, I think, over the years. We may have met there, I think, many years ago.
Yes.
And it's a neat little asset, and I think it makes it a little more special for somebody when they finally have gotten to the point where they can show what they've done, and bring it to a studio environment, and also deal with people that want you there, are happy to see you, and want to help, including, you know, and that goes from the top down in the studio, but people who run the cafe and people who run the screening rooms, just happy to have anybody come in, and we get pleasure of seeing somebody show their finished product.
Oh, yeah, and all of your people are so great to work with, because one of the events I had, Tom Malloy was teaching, he was filmmaking, raising money, and because it's a theater, the lighting was very low. I said, oh my gosh, we've got to get a spotlight on Tom, and they said, no problem, how about two, and we had them. That was wonderful. But anyway, I love those rooms, and I think filmmakers should know about it. Now, we had a filmmaker go there recently to get his electronic press kit done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something
very
new
nice.
Everybody needs, and your Jason in the screening room took care of him. The guy gave me a thanks. He was very pleased with it.
Good to hear, and it's actually changed so much too. I mean, like 10 or 15 years ago, almost everything was film, and now that's changed to the almost exact opposite. I think maybe 15 years ago, 80% of whatever was shown there was 35 millimeter, and now 85% of everything that you see is digital. So we've had to upgrade with 3D screens and projectors and all kinds of crazy equipment, and we've been the beneficiary of a few companies that were on the lot. TX and Microsoft were doing nonprofits trying to devise new surround systems for theaters, so we benefited by the installation of, I think at the time, 7.1 surround, or dedicated surround is what they were working on at the time, and 3D screens from Silver Screen and projection systems. Companies, including filmmakers, companies that come on the lot on an independent studio You have no real executive oversight, you know, majors or from the companies that you work for, so you kind of feel free to explore those things in a safe haven. So that's one of the benefits of a independent studio, is there's no real affiliation with any one company, and so people find it to be kind of a communal place to actually do whatever it is you want to do.
Well, Britt, I was wondering if you could tell us what information a producer would actually need before they call about renting a stage there at Raleigh.
I think one of the things, and I started my career here at Raleigh in post-production and in studio operations and now in business development, one of the things that I always thought was kind of interesting is that kind of new producers who are doing their own project are very emotionally attached to whatever the material is. And I think there's probably, if I could give one bit of advice, it's a different mindset when you're talking about renting a facility than making the production. From our perspective, we want to help you make the production, so we just kind of need to get down to the details of it. And many times, newer producers will try and tell you what the script is about and tell you what the story is and try to get you to buy up on the story. And really, it's not a motivating factor here. I think what is true here is that we want to build relationships with people. So one of the things I think that would benefit the producer coming in is trying to establish that relationship, get to know the people on the phone, and vice versa for the studio to get to know them and understand what your issues are. And it's kind of details that aren't really story-related. What kind of budget do you have? What is it you're trying to achieve? How much time do you think you're going to need? And believe me, there's a great deal of empathy from all the studio, the divisions here, including the lighting company, Hollywood Rentals. There's a great deal of empathy for people, excuse me, who are on a budget, who are doing their first production. So don't be afraid to say, you know, how much money you have, regardless of whatever that number is, and see what can be done to help. There have been plenty of instances where, if it's available, we'll do it at no cost, just provide the insurance, or maybe you have to have a security guard that you pay for. But, I mean, you're talking about a couple hundred dollars. And we've done that for filmmakers whenever we've had the opportunity. The same goes for lighting and grip equipment, that if it's there and if it's not doing anything, the people in the company are inclined to help. And in the hopes that someday the budget increases on the next project or the next project, and you will have had that relationship built over a period of time. So I guess first thing, establish some kind of relationship with the person on the phone. And then second, feel free to augment that by actually coming in and sitting down and kind of talking about what your project needs are.
Well, tell us, if you wanted a full package, what might that include for a movie?
It's always best, if you're trying to get the best price, is to get as much with, for us anyway, to try and get as much through the studio as you possibly can. We kind of view it as chips on the table. You've got stages and offices and services and lighting and grip. The more you do through the studio, the more the studio benefits from it, and the more we can work with somebody on the price. If you're going outside the studio for some of the services, then we're fairly limited at what we can offer. Say you just want a stage and you're going to do catering with somebody else and you're trying to get lighting equipment in with a gaffer that you hired, it was likely for us to actually drop the price of all of it, or at least a stage, if you're outsourcing those other things. So I think the best thing as far as trying to get the best price is to offer that to the studio. Here's everything that I'm going to need. How much can you provide? And then on this side of the fence, we can say, oh, well, you're spending, instead of $5 on this stage, you're going to spend $20 throughout the studio. Let's drop the price of each of them.
Right.
And you may not be able to do that if you go to individual people.
Right. Because the more you spend, the more discount you can get. So that's good to
know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Absolutely.
What do you consider the most favorable locations to film in regards to incentives and film community?
The landscape has definitely changed. Over the years, I think at one time California had $35 billion in economic impact. It's now down to 25, and I think it started with Canada in 97 with an incentive program that they ended up calling it runaway production. Canada then built a pretty robust industry, and it's very well known now. And then states in the United States started following suit, New Mexico, Louisiana, Georgia, New York. And now I think it's a global industry. Now, the same film that you would, 10 or 15 years ago only considered to shoot in Los Angeles, you're now looking at Romania or Budapest or the UK. So it's definitely an interesting kind of evolution of landscape as far as your potential locations. In the United States, the best, probably most incentivized, consistently incentivized location would be, I would think, Louisiana. 30% plus 5% on local labor, which means you could get as much as 35% of your spend back. And there are companies that will finance that spend. So you could come in with 75% of your budget, get the rest financed from, for a percentage from an institution. And then that becomes your finishing funds for the film. We have a studio in Baton Rouge that was all premised on that incentive program, and people were filming and continue to film in Louisiana. I think they're now at about $1 billion, or close to $1 billion in spend in production in Louisiana. So that's a pretty favorable location. On a global scale, you can look, depending on your budget, a higher budget, the more this becomes important. The UK is definitely a huge place to consider. 25%, but it also includes all of your talent cost, even if they're not living in the UK. So as a result of that, 75% of the feature films, dollars of money spent in the UK is actually coming from the United States. So,
wow. I mean, they go over to shoot there. That much of, mm-hmm. that much production is
yep.
going to the UK. And is this a
yep.
government incentive program, this 25%?
It is. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. And California...
Yeah, and it continues to go.
California's only what, Brett, 20?
Yeah, with a $100 million cap. Mm-hmm. And, it would certainly be easy enough if California were to bump their incentive. It would impact everybody else, I think, outside of California. It's a tough thing, incentives. Anybody that has a program that outdoes another program nearby, it will impact that particular location. So it was, as was true for a brief time in Michigan, where they had a 42% production incentive that passed the legislation and had no sunset. And within 24 hours, the Film Commission received 83 scripts for consideration, and we went underway on a studio project in Michigan that was sold out with Disney's Oz before the doors opened.
Wow.
And that was a huge film, I think. If I'm not mistaken, they spent upwards of $140 million in the state of Michigan. Probably the biggest film of the year, and one of the biggest films in history as far as budget. So as soon as that legislation ended, and a new administration came in and they cut the incentive way down, now those films are considering other locations, including back in California. So for studios, it becomes an interesting and a perplexing thing. How do you develop and grow? But it can't be entirely based on incentives, because as we can see, that they do change and it will impact your business. For the filmmaker, however, I think it's important to consider the best bang for your buck. And obviously, filmmakers are.
That's what they want to hear. Where?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the best place?
And,
what
and,
about
and,
New York?
And you're
what?
Not necessarily limited to the United States either. I mean, there's you could consider Europe. And, I think 10 years ago, you wouldn't even think about that. I know that I was shocked the first time I, saw The Cold War, which is, I think, a Civil War film that was shot in Eastern Europe. Like, well, why in the world would you consider that location? And I think now it becomes fairly common to consider those locations. You can shoot U.S. kind of originated product in various locations all over the world.
And save some money based on California and the SAG and all the other expenses that you would be dealing with here, right?
Yeah, and that's part of it. I know that Marvel Entertainment has struggled. They've been trying to keep their films in California and pencil it out as best they can. I mean, a really concerted effort to try and shoot as much of it in California as they possibly could, including working with unions and working with us and grinding us down on the rates as much as possible, just to make that happen. But there are compelling arguments, and they ended up shooting Captain America in the UK. They shot much of Iron Man 3 in Wilmington. And now, because of box office distribution potential in China, they're shooting some of their location work in China as well.
I've seen China come up in so many films now. This new 007 film was shot partially there. Because they're opening up to American production. And is Raleigh working with anything in China?
We are. We started a project about a year ago, just outside of Shanghai in a city called Wuxi. Beautiful facility, still under construction, not quite finished with the first phase, but really kind of hopeful at what the potential of that could be for a couple of primary reasons. One of them is that the Chinese film market itself, the local production, is going to grow. Budgets are going to increase, and there's going to be a demand for local product, Chinese language films. It's at probably the level of, I would guess, as far as quality and budget range of what you would have expected here in the 50s. And that has no place to go but up. And I was just reading today that the number of screens current, which has just really increased over the last 3 to 5 years, the number of screens per capita, is still a fraction of what it is in the United States. That market's going to grow, more and more people are going to watch movies, and the demand for local movies is going to grow. So a facility that grows with that, I think, is going to be beneficial for international to try and get box office release in a country with that many people and that many screens. There's two options. One is they allow so many films per year into the country for box office release, or you can do a co-production where shooting some of it in the country qualifies you for release in China. So more and more productions are contemplating a co-product deal where they're actually shooting in China and not relying on kind of a lottery to be one of the 34 films that are allowed to release in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about the Chinese? How about working with them? Would you say that independent filmmakers have a chance of going to China, doing a co-production? Maybe part of the film is shot here and the balance is shot there, as long as it has an integral story to the Chinese people.
It's totally possible. SARV, the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television in China, does have a list of criteria that you have to adhere to in order to get a co-production granted. And they're kind of ethical things, you know, whether it's no gratuitous violence or sex or nudity, no glorifying, things like that. And they will read the script and make sure that they're comfortable with the material before they approve a project that could be filmed in the country and then subsequently released in the country. So there's that process to go through. Part of the upside in China is that they really want that to happen. And so there are numerous film funds in China to encourage that co-production to occur. So there are funds available in China as long as the material fits within that criteria. And then the other upside is the potential to actually be released in the country. So there are many positives. I think the difficult part is it's a wildly different culture than in the United States. And for us, it's been quite a learning experience. I'm sure for our partners in Wuxi, it's been a learning experience as well.
Well,
what about some of the features and TV shows that are being shot in some of the other Raleigh studios, the various ones?
We've been pretty fortunate for many years, I think, in Hollywood. I think we've been full for about 8 or 9 years now. And currently we have Castle, which is an ABC Disney show, Private Practice, ABC Disney, a spinoff of The Closer that was here for several years called Major Crimes. It's a Warner TNT show. And we also manage a facility in Manhattan Beach and have for about 15 years. And currently that's Avatar 2 and 3. Marvel's headquarters is there, and it looks like they're going to do Captain America 2 here in California, no less. And what else is down there? 90210, Revenge. And then in Playa Vista, we have a facility that we have managed for about 6 years, which Howard Hughes built in 1941. It's airplane hangars that he originally built the Spruce Goose. And in that facility, we've done Transformers 1, 2, and 3, Iron Man 1, and Eagle Eye. John Carter of Mars did some work there. Star Trek, and hopefully we'll be looking at another big tentpole production in a month.
Gosh, that's wonderful. Because out of, I read, now don't quote me, but out of 22 one-hour shows that are currently running on television or cable, only one was being shot in L.A. The rest of the 20 one were being shot outside of California. So you've got a lot of work going, relatively speaking.
Oh, we've been tremendously fortunate. Hopefully hard work and a kind heart is paying dividends for us. But I do think all of those shows, you know, I mean, those are major companies. I think the producers of those shows enjoy the environment. You know, they kind of get out from under, again, that a sense of oversight if you were, you know, that you would experience in a major studio. One of those cable shows is actually shooting at a studio we started working with about 3 years ago in Georgia, Walking Dead, which I guess is one of the highest rated cable shows as well. And in Baton Rouge, we've had been fortunate there too. Battleship, Battle LA, Universal did Oblivion there, Twilight 2, and Budapest. I think we did 47 Ronin, which was the largest film in the history of the country about a year ago. A lot of BBC things with the Ring title. We've been a pretty lucky company.
Yes, you have. Well, Britt, we have just a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to reach you. What are some of the best ways to contact you?
The best is probably start with a website, depending on what area you're looking for. And you can it has emails of different department heads, whether it's screening rooms or if you want to take a look at the cafe or special events. You're always welcome to call the main number here, 960-FILM, 323-960-FILM. And
that website address is?
RaleighStudios.com.
Great. Thank you.
And one of the things that I wanted to mention earlier is that not to be intimidated by that studio environment. If it's a new filmmaker or a first-time filmmaker or somebody who's yet to experience it, don't hesitate to call. It's really a wonderful group of people who would love to hear from you. Don't be intimidated by the studio kind of environment. I would encourage everybody just to give it a call and see if there's anything we can do for you.
Oh, how wonderful. Thank you so much, Britt. We really appreciate your donation to the film grant and your sharing of information, and I know that you're a great writer and you love the film industry, so thank you very much.
Well, yes. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Carol, you're fantastic. I couldn't say enough about you, and I don't think my career would be what it is without you, so great appreciation for you. So glad you're part of Emily.
Thank you. How kind. Thank you.
All right, Britt. Well, got to say goodbye now, but thank you, and good luck with all the rest of your events.
Well, thank you. I might need some.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAILKEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at fromtheheartproductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.